Welcome to this special edition of The Burning Platform. It's primarily a special edition because it's the week before the elections. It's also our last Burning Platform before election season is officially over. I know for many people that's going to be a relief. For many of us, it's going to mean we have to actually make conversation and small talk again, which might be irritating for some. But I'm delighted tonight to have the guests that we do have. And just quickly, by way of explanation, the only reason that Pumi Mashiho is not with me at the moment is she is on the ground in Israel gathering some intel for us. She's going to find out all about what's going on in that war-torn part of the world. And I don't doubt at all that she'll come back with plenty of very, very salient and useful and interesting information. So it's me on my own, but I'm joined very capably by two absolutely terrific gentlemen, two guys I'm thrilled to have on the same show. I don't know if they've ever been on the same show together, but this is the quality of the analysis that we are hoping to get tonight. First of all, Wayne Sussman, who is an independent elections analyst. He's known as the Elections Geek, and we spoke to him not so long ago on both Democracy 101 and on this show, The Burning Platform. So, Wayne, lovely to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Gareth, and what a privilege to do the 7 days out before the big day, just about a week ago to elections, and I'm thrilled to be on the show with you. Thank you.
Yeah, well, the other guest that we have is this man, Davi Skoltz, who you'll know as well. He's also an elections nerd, but he's joining us today from Dubai, where he is busy looking at the elections, and he produces all kinds of election results projections and detailed results analysis, as well as doing management consulting. So, Davi, I'm so pleased you could make some time for us today, too. I'm thrilled to have you both on. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Gareth. Excited for the session.
Right. Well, it is exciting, and I'm going to start off with something that I think you had a hand in, Wayne. So this is the ENCA and Mark Data second election poll for 2024. It came out just a couple of hours ago, and there's a lot of stuff here that I think will get people agitated, irritated, afraid, excited, enthusiastic, who knows. But I think the main takeaway from this is something that you have been quite reserved and conservative about and quite consistent about from day one. And that is that if the ANC do drop below 50%, it's not going to be by much. And if they do, you've got some ideas on what that might look like and who the other parties might be, which ones are busy touting a nonsense story about how big they're going to be and which ones might even have a chance to make a difference in this election. You can have the opening remarks. Tell us about this ENCA and Mark Data poll.
Thank you. So with being involved in this poll has seen me become a referee and a player, which is very, very difficult and challenging. I helped frame a lot of the questions for this poll, helped formulate the poll. And then you leave it to a great company like Mark Data. We did 3,046 interviews. These were face-to-face interviews done in people's language of choice. We covered rural areas. If I look at the sampling, things like race, gender, geography gets taken strongly into account. The 3,046 respondents were broken down per voting population size and within the 9 provinces. And this was done between the middle of April and I think the 9th of May, so over about a three and a half week period. And during that period, Gareth, we know that Jacob Zuma was winning many court cases, that MK was surging. Mm-hmm. And when you see, and this is again the remarks of the referee and the player, just very briefly, when we got the feedback on MK, my partners in the poll really pushed back saying, how is this possible that MK can be so high in KwaZulu-Natal? And again, we think we caught them on the way up. I do not expect them to get that on election day. However, what was clear from the research and the field work done by the enumerators is that in many, bar for the suburbs, in all rural areas and townships, it wasn't the EFF, it wasn't the IFP, it wasn't the ANC who had the most activity and energy. At this particular time, it was Umkhonto weSizwe.
Wow. All right, so just looking at it briefly, and because it's very small on screen, I'm just going to talk about KZN here so everybody, including Davi, can get an idea of what it says there. So for KwaZulu-Natal, that big green stripe at the top is not the ANC, but MK at 46.4%. Now, as you say, that might have been a thing that was going on at the beginning of May, but it's still significant. 46.4. Next biggest party is the IFP at 14.5%. Next biggest party is the DA at 12.2%. And only then the ANC at 11.1%. The others below 9.1% and the EFF at only 6.7%. So that's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a stunning result. And again, I think it's unlikely to hold come election day. I think MK will run into challenges. I don't think they'll have the ANC's ground game. But this clearly shows that when we think back, Gareth, and I've had the privilege of having many conversations with you, certainly before MK was born, I did not think that a party formed on the 16th of December, led by an 82-year-old man who will actually not, we now know will not be in Parliament, will be the party who would garner most of our attention before the elections.
Yeah, it does kind of fly in the face of so many of those predictions that were made before MK was a thing on the scene. And there were a lot of those polls which people were very, very sure of. I don't think anyone could have predicted this. So I don't expect either of you to be Nostradamus today either. Davi, you've also been paying close attention. And just like Wayne, you watch all the municipal by-elections, you number crunch, you like seeing where the trends are. Are you surprised by this MK turn of events in KZN?
I want to say a couple of things just in general, right, before I answer that one specifically. Like, I think
sure.
I would really caution or suggest a lot of caution at this point in time. Firstly, in interpreting the polling, and then also having any kind of strong expectation for what could happen next week, right? Because I think there's three variables in my mind that are incredibly difficult to poll, and that is causing a lot of uncertainty in this election. So number one is turnout, right? And exactly what the level of turnout will be and who will turn out. And this is incredibly difficult to poll, by the way, because you know, every person that the pollster calls, the pollster needs to make an assessment of, you know, is this person 100% likely to turn out or not likely to turn out or kind of somewhat likely to turn out? And, you know, who gets included in the poll and not in the poll? So that's the first piece of very complicated analysis that these pollsters need to do when they do this polling. And, you know, I don't blame them for you know, having to take a view on it, but who knows whether they're right or not on it, because the turnout estimations are quite challenging, right? And I think one thing, and I just want to say one more thing on this, on the turnout, is we've seen turnout patterns going down in South Africa over time, over many years, and I think the general expectation is that turnout will be lower, right? It was 66% last time. The expectation is that it will be lower. There's been a lot of talk about the ANC losing the election, which is going to animate people who don't like the ANC, but it's also going to animate people who are generally positive about the ANC. And so I think this assumption that we're going to have a low turnout election, it's a fair assumption to have because of the patterns that we've seen historically, but it's most definitely not like something that you can be certain about, in my view. That's the first thing that's highly uncertain. The second point is, and here I have a lot of empathy for the pollsters, is I just think that there's a huge number of people who are much more fluid than in the past. So when you're a pollster and you phone someone and you try to figure out who they're going to vote for, I think there's a lot of people who are telling you, like, I'm not really sure. And then you ask them three or four follow-up questions to try to allocate them, right? So who did you vote for last time? Oh, you didn't vote last time. Where do you live? Oh, you live in rural northern KZN. Okay. Who do you like more? John Steenhuisen or Cyril Ramaphosa or Jacob Zuma? I kind of prefer Zuma. And then you allocate the person to MK, right? But you're really not certain whether that person is actually going to vote for MK or not. So the undecided allocation algorithm, I think, is extremely complex in this election. And I think it's what's causing results like what we're seeing in the poll that Wayne was just talking about for KZN.
Okay.
So that's the second thing. And the third thing is demographic representativity, I think, is a much more complex concept now than it was in the past, in that there are now sub-pockets of the electorate that are behaving in really interesting and unique ways that we haven't seen previously. Like, and there's one thing from the by-elections that is very clear, as just as an example, right, is in the past, the colored electorate nationally would move, I would say, not perfectly uniformly, but it would be a pretty consistent pattern with minor variations across the country of how colored voters vote, right? We're seeing right. in by-elections enormous swings to the Patriotic Alliance, particularly in like the rural Northern Cape, slightly lesser, but also true in the rural Western Cape. But the like metro area, colored voters in the city of Cape Town, the extent to which they swing to the PA or not is a huge question. And then, you know, in the last election, the PA basically like won like 80% of the colored vote in Gauteng, right? Whether that's going to hold or not, we'll see. But the point I'm trying to make is that demographic representativity, it's not just anymore about like having the percentage of colored voters that are in the electorate in your poll. It's now also about balancing it between the rural colored vote and the metro colored vote and the Gauteng colored vote. And that's just one example. We haven't even gotten into the 10 other demographic groups in the country to think about. So there's a level of complexity here, which I think increases uncertainty by orders of magnitude. And so, you know, I can't even respond to that poll. I can't even say to you that, you know, I wouldn't want to say that I disagree with the poll that says MK is at 46 because I have no scientific basis upon which to say to you, like, I don't think MK can get 46 other than my feel. Right?
I'm relieved. So, the last thing I wanted to do was host a fight between you and Wayne this evening.
I would never fight Wayne.
All right, but Wayne, I mean, this is interesting. What do you respond in terms of those three points, which I think are very valid, that Davi just brought up?
I agree with Davi that turnout is very, very hard to predict. When we heard that the election was proclaimed for the 29th of May, so everyone expected the 22nd of May. 29th of May is much closer to is much further along the winter path. It's much colder. We're going to have beautiful voting day. People will need to take water bottles in many parts of the country to stay hydrated on election day. So that is something we didn't foresee. I wouldn't have foreseen. I agree with Davi. I think certainly in KwaZulu-Natal, there is a lot of talk, a lot of competition, and there's going to be a lot of energy on voting day. And because this makes up over 20% of the national voter, the national voters' roll, I think that is something which makes turnout really hard to predict. And I agree with Davi that in a way, I think in the last few days, the election is in. There are some old fault lines being re-emerging, i.e., what would happen if the multi-party charter had to take power? Would they bring back the worst days of this country? And therefore, I think you are seeing some voters gravitate towards the ANC. Whether that energizes the ANC remains to be seen. But just at one point on turnout, I mean, you have this number of 66% turnout, Gareth, which we had in the last election. But of course, that's not equally represented. Now, for me, what is going to be very interesting, and I'm not doing the interview you are, but I'd love to get Davi's insight. I mean, let's take Ekurhuleni, for example. In 2019, 74% of voters in Ekurhuleni turned up. You go to the ANC stronghold of Colin Shabani in Malamulele and Limpopo, 88% for the ANC, but only 53% turnout. You go to the OR Tambo district of Umtata and towns like Libori, massively, the ANC is essentially the only game in town there, 55, 56% turnout. Are we going to see that turnout gap narrow? You would expect turnout to be up in competitive areas, but I'm talking about the heartland areas. What's going to happen to turnout there this time around?
What do you think, Darby?
I don't know. Like I think this is the right question, right? I think that is the critical question for turnout in this election, is the relative turnout of the various parties and their base. You know, in 2021, it's the biggest gap ever in favor of like DA leaning areas, right, in minority areas. We have to see. I think it's in 2019 nationally it was about 10% between, you know, strongly anti ANC areas versus ANC areas. The turnout was about 10% higher in the anti ANC areas, and I think we need to see if it's more than 10% this time. It will help the DA and the other opposition parties. If it's less than 10%, it helps the ANC, right? So I think it's wait and see. But there's one little devil in the detail on this one, which I honestly think is going to be a real complexity on election day, is that I am not sure that a lot of people are aware in South Africa today that they have to vote at the voting station where they are registered. Because that's been a law change that's taken place recently, right? And in 2019, I think about, Wayne will know maybe the exact number, but I think it was about 1.6 million people, right? 1.6 million people voted at the voting station, which was not their registered voting station, because you could just walk in, they would make you fill in a quick form, but you could still vote. And if it was any voting station in your province, you would be able to vote on both the provincial and national ballot, right? And if it was outside your province, you would just get a national ballot. This time, folks listening at home, you have to vote exactly at the voting station you are registered. I'll say that again. You have to vote exactly at the voting station you are registered. If you go to another voting station, there's no form to fill in. They're going to show you a way. You're not even going to get a national ballot, right? And I think there's a lot of people who do not know that, right? So there was this one option to apply for a special compensation to go vote at a different voting station. You had to do that by 17 May. Now, about 300,000 people have done that, right? So we had 1.6 million people do this in 2019. 300,000 have registered to do it this time around. There's potentially a million plus people who are going to go to a voting station and be turned away to go to a different voting station. So maybe they won't have a problem to just go down the road to their actual voting station or to the town they've moved from or whatever. But I think that could have a very serious impact on turnout in this election. And and if you do the analysis of how these votes are distributed, they are disproportionately ANC voters who are voting at stations that that are not their own. And that could have a really interesting impact on this election, by the way. That's one very important, I think, devil in the details for this election that we'll have to see.
Okay, so
and just another one. Sorry, just if I know it's your interview, Gareth, but in the same realm, with special votes, which is different to what Darvey's talking about, which is the S24A form, but special votes, the applications are far higher this time compared to last time. And what this means is, and we'll get to see this on Monday and Tuesday, and I've done a pretty extensive analysis, not my most rigorous analysis, but for instance, Gareth, when you look at the voters' roll, the Eastern Cape rounding up, rounding down is 12% of the national voters' roll. Of the special votes applications, it's 17%. So a huge number of special votes applications in the Eastern Cape. I think that favors the ANC. In Gauteng, the analysis I've done, I think it favors the opposition parties. However, having said that, it's one thing having this huge number of people applying for special votes. Thing is, can the ANC fulfill all those applications? Will all those people show up for their special votes or be available when the IEC comes and visits them if they're old, infirm, heavily pregnant, can't move? That's another thing in this election, which I don't think is giving enough attention, and I think Darvey would agree with me, is another thing which is significant this time around.
Okay, so just briefly, if we refer just one more time to your poll that you put out with ENCA, it's putting the ANC at 43.4%. Really, I think the most interesting thing for most people in this election will be what kind of a percentage the ANC gets overall, because obviously that 50 plus one is make or break for them, and it will be the first election where that might drop down. Foreseeably, and based on the results that you've already looked at, based on previous elections, the trends, that kind of thing, I'm going to caveat this for you guys and say it's not a prediction, but what do you think the tracking suggests in terms of ANC performance nationally?
Can I go? Or do you want to go first, man?
No, you go.
Okay. So look, let's have a very fact-based discussion, right? Like on like confirmed facts. So I think the best confirmed fact that we have, which is not disputable, is the last election, right, in 2021. So in 2021, the ANC got 46% of the vote, right? So they were sub 50. But of course, what's also a fact is that local government elections are not exactly like national government elections. And, you know, I could talk a lot about it, but probably if you translate that result like for like into a national government situation, it puts the ANC at like 49 or 50, right? So that's, I think that's, so that's for me is the starting point in this election, with maybe like one minor caveat, which is we are seeing, I'd say, like systematic degradation of ANC support over time in South Africa for two reasons. One, just if you govern for 30 years, if you govern for 25 years, if you govern for 35 years, the longer it goes, typically, like in all democracies, the more a change momentum grows. And particularly if you govern on a like growing wrong track number, right? So the ANC is governing for a very long period of time. And the percentage of people who believe the country is going in the wrong direction, I think that is a relatively factual statement, is getting higher over time, right? That typically just results in systematic reduction in your support, right? It's sort of like a mathematical fact in democracies. That's one. And the second point is there's also demographic change in the electorate. So kind of the younger cohorts of voters who are joining the electorate, right? So people who every year are registering, like the people who turned 18 last year, the people who turned 18 the year before. Those cohorts of voters across all races are much, much less likely to vote ANC than their older cohorts, right? And that change that's taking place in the electorate means that with every year that goes past, the ANC probably loses, just on a pure like-for-like comparison, half a point or a point. So the 49 or the 50 that is the starting point in 2021 is worth 46, 47 now, if everything else stays the same, right? So for me, you know, just spitballing here, probably a starting point is like 45 to 50, right? If I had to guess, just based on that, with all else equal, right? Minus MK. So that's what it always felt like to me, is sort of 45 to 50 minus the impact of MK. And who knows where MK will really land, given the level of uncertainty of turnout and given the amount of like quite like, I think, marginal voters that may vote for them or not, right? And we have to wait and see. So it's a really annoying answer. I'm sorry, but my fundamental view is 45 to 50 minus MK, which I think is, though, the one thing I think that you may say is meaningful about that answer is that, in other words, Davi, less than 50, right? It feels a lot like less than 50, right? With the caveat that comparing like for like, right? So if something strange happens, like for example, this 10% turnout gap that I was talking about, maybe people feel really defensive of the ANC and there's huge turnout amongst the ANC voters that wasn't the case last time, that could affect that, right? Maybe the flag ad ends up really hurting the DA. I doubt it, for the record, but let's say it does, right? Stuff like that may change that, but long way of saying that I think a big range of 45 to 50 minus MK is sort of my base expectation if nothing dramatic changes.
Would you agree with that, Wayne?
Yeah. Davi and I on Davi might be a rain man. I'm not a rain man, but Davi and I are hard workers. We geeks. We nerds. We look into the data, and the ANC and the DA and the EFF are seeing the same data we have access to, and that's why I agree with Davi. I mean, surely the ANC understands that it is absolutely critical in the final week of the election to go, and I'm sorry for repeating myself, to go to those rural areas and do whatever you can to energize those places which remain much more loyal to you than many of the townships and many of the urban areas in the country. So that is going to be absolutely massive, because then it gets the ANC closer to that 50% mark and possibly over that. So, and again, just to take a step back, and it's a very clear and consistent line that since 2009, the ANC has been declining 4 percentage points in each election. We know that they got 57.5. We round up 58% last time. That takes you down. So are they near 54%? Obviously, they're not going to get 54%, because the EFF is largely stable. You have Umkhonto Sizwe, which is a juggernaut. Yes, it could implode. Yes, they could have a terrible election day ground game. But we know that MK is going to hurt the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal and possibly, likely in Gauteng and Mpumalanga as well. And then there are other small ANC splinter groups. Ace Magashule doing a bit of damage in towns like Sasselburg and Parys isn't going to be consequential in the grand scheme of things, but that is death by 1,000 cuts. Then you take the fact exactly what Darby said, and again, this is cute, but it's just, let's make the point that what did we see between 2016 and 2019? In 2016, the ANC got 54% and they grew by 4 percentage points in the 2019 poll. And it's Darby said in a much more eloquent way, but essentially 46% plus 4 this time round, I mean, it's less of a trend, is 50%. So I would say, but I do think, Gareth, that we know in the last 4 to 6 days of the campaign, the ANC closes very hard. They've got more resources, more volunteers, more high-profile names. They've got this Inqoba rally. So my gut today, a week out, says 46, but I could see the ANC crawl up to about 48%. You know, it's interesting. I'm going to let Darby have that 5% range between 45 and 50, because I think the last time, Gareth, you and I spoke, I said 46 to 52. So let me nail my let me put that number out there, 47, 48.
All right, well, that's about as close as we're going to get to you guys predicting anything, but I do want to carry on playing this game a little bit. There are places that nothing has really changed. I mean, we talk about Limpopo, and you were saying safe seats, the homeland, all that kind of thing. I'm interested especially in the fractioning of the colored vote, which was kind of a block before. That is interesting. I don't see the PA making massive inroads on this particular poll, except obviously in the Western Cape. I don't know what the Northern Cape numbers are. But do you think that they have a chance of making any kind of inroads in Gauteng?
Big time. So, look, the PA vote is focused in colored areas. Sorry, did I?
No, go ahead, Darby.
So, look, I think the PA question is definitely clustered in colored vote and colored communities, right? I think the epicenter in 2021 was in Gauteng, places like Eldorado Park, Rivoli, all these kind of colored communities in the southern part of Joburg, but also actually all over Gauteng and even kind of other parts of the northern provinces. But it's clearly into the rural, at least the Northern Cape and the rural Western Cape. I think the critical question is it into Nelson Mandela Bay, right? In the northern areas of Nelson Mandela Bay, where there's a very large colored community. And then, of course, the city of Cape Town, which is the bulk of the kind of Western Cape vote, right? Like, what happens in the Cape Flat? So I think that's the critical question. But I just want to say one thing. I think that this question about, like, the fractioning of what you said of the colored vote, like the fragmentation of the colored vote, right? It's actually, Gareth, I think the fragmentation of the entire electorate, right? Like in the white electorate, there's a huge battle going on between the DA, the Freedom Front Plus, and to a lesser extent, Action SA in white Afrikaans communities, and a little bit Rise. And I think there's a huge battle going on with white English voters between the DA, Action SA, and Rise, right? If you kind of like turn to each pocket of the electorate, you can talk about Northern KZN and the fragmentation that's taking place there. You can talk about Zulu voters in the south of KZN and the fragmentation that's taking place there. It's like every pocket of the electorate is having this fragmentation take place. And sorry for the theoretical answer, but if you study political science, the electoral system that we have, which is a proportional representation system, which is what they generally have in Europe, right? Mm-hmm. Over time, almost always results in this fragmentation where no party gets 50. There are a bunch of parties in like the 20s and the 30s, and there's always coalitions, right? And it just looks like and feels like we are at the start of our transformation as kind of the South African democracy in going in that direction. If you look at the trends, if you look at the by-elections, we'll see next week.
And that's not a bad thing. I mean, that might be a very interesting turnout for the books. It gives everybody a feeling, and we are a diverse country, that they can find something to represent them in all these choices.
Sorry, Wayne, I'll just say one thing and then I'll let Wayne have a go. Like, yes, it is. I think it's a good thing for contestation and for representativity and for accountability. But, I mean, and this is not an endorsement of the ANC, just to be totally clear, but our parties really have to figure out how to govern effectively in coalitions. Like, it's going to be, like, absolutely an essential problem to crack in the next 5 years, at provincial level, at local government level, potentially at national government level. Because, I mean, the chaos we've seen in the metros is just like, it's basically unacceptable, right? that we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years. Sorry, Wayne, I spoke out loud.
Go ahead, Wayne.
No. So first of all, on fragmentation, Darby's 100% right. There are currently 14 parties represented in Parliament. It'll be interesting to see what that number lands on after the election. By the way, they're going to be a lot of people who left political parties to form their own political parties who are going to be heartbroken the day after the election. By the way, there are going to be a lot of big parties which are going to be heartbroken, and we might have a chance to discuss those scenarios because of all this contestation and all this competition. So with regards to the Patriotic Alliance, so first of all, what we said when – I'm going to go back to the poll now. When we formulated the poll, I said whatever the outcome is, we cannot – I want the Patriotic Alliance to be standalone in provinces like the Western Cape and the Northern Cape, and I think we said the Eastern Cape and Gauteng. Because in many opinion polls, not just ours, the PA were not featuring. But after that round of by-elections in April – where you saw the PA surge from 1% to 65% in Dasselsdorp in Oudtshoorn, where you saw them smash the – well, not smash. Well, they breached the DA's blue wall in Swartland, Malmesbury. Darby will know that this at one stage was the safest DA, safest DA municipality in the country. And they came very close to winning a seat off the ANC in the town of Clanwilliam, said they have to be featuring. And you see the crowds Gator McKenzie's pulling, often in rural areas where you can't use taxis. Like when you're holding a rally in Brandfle in the Northern Cape, which is, you can look at it on the map, it's very far from whatever's very far. That is real. I don't think you're using taxis there. So you had to show up. And it stunned me again. So the one thing, what stunned me, MK 46%. The other thing which stunned me, PA behind good in the Western Cape. I don't think that'll hold on election day. I think PA are going to do very well, but exactly what Darby said, there's very little data on Gayton McKenzie and the PA in the city of Cape Town. Gareth, in 2016, the DA was beating the ANC by 11 votes to 1 in many of the Mitchell's Plain and Cape Flats wards. So I think, and the results of close in the Platteland. So that is something which remains to be seen. Just one other place, and it's small margins, but I mean, look, Gayton McKenzie comes from the Free State. I'm going to watch him in the Free State on election day. Can he beat possibly Aish Makhashule and MK on the provincial ballot? So, but then also, can he hold on to places like Ennerdale and Riverlea? Those communities, I mean, they're often split between townships and coloured communities, but those suburbs of Riverlea and Ennerdale, can he do as well as he does in Eldorado Park? It's going to be very, very interesting to see. Just my final point on this, Gareth, is that when I, again, mapped out my road to 2024 and MK wasn't on my dance card, I thought that there would be more contestation from parties like Good and the NCC, the National Cape Coloured Congress. I wonder with this PA juggernaut, whether it's just become a straight contest in many of these areas between the DA and the PA, and that some of those other parties are not going to feature as I thought they might have.
Well, I mean, you just mentioned Good. I mean, I hadn't even factored them in the Western Cape. Which parties are we not going to have to hear from anymore after this election? About Cope. Are we going to have to hear the word cope ever again?
Let me say something philosophical. I know I've just spoken, but I had the privilege of opening an event where there were eight, nine political parties on Sunday, and Monsieur Lakota was there. And I looked at this individual who has played a great role in our country, key in ending apartheid, in guiding the ANC in the country soon after 1994, forming this impressive breakaway COPE, which loomed large in the political discussion. And I look at it today, and I respect the man greatly. I have empathy for him. I think he should have retired. And maybe the lesson here is that if COPE fails to come back, and this man who has played an outsized role in our country, in our modern democracy, loses his seat, that other political parties and other leaders will learn lessons that when it's time to bow out, you should bow out.
Hmm. Okay, so it sounds to me like that is going to be the end of COPE. Who else is going to have a shitty election, Davi?
Look, I mean, actually, well, okay. You've asked about the small parties, but I will say one thing, which is kind of one of my little theories, is that everyone may have a shitty election. Like, this may be one of those elections where, like, the ANC kind of gets hurt, but they're not, like, out, right? The DA does okay, but is not delighted. The IFP's growth gets a bit, like, choked by MK. Same for the EFF. All of the very kind of new parties like Arise and Action SA who are like keen to make an impact, kind of get a foothold, but not that much. The PA right. does well in some communities, but they get a foothold, but not that much. Like I feel like it's very possible that we have an outcome like that. But like who is at risk of like not being in the top 10 anymore? Like definitely the UDM, Good is on that list in my view. COPE is on that list in my view. The NFP is on that list in my view. I'd say the ACDP is kind of on the watch list, but, you know, there's some hope for them, particularly in the Western Cape. They seem to do okay. I know they're new, but...
I hope there's prayer. There's prayer.
There's prayer, exactly.
There's prayer but ACDP, not hope. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, Bongani Baloyi's new party. I don't really see them doing much. I think a very interesting one to watch is BOSA, actually.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, Maimane has a lot of name recognition, kind of has had a couple of like good moments on the campaign, you know, like good media. In fact, you know, they put out that ad, was it today, right? With the yeah. little thing with Cyril, the little corruption.
Yeah, Suga Cyril. That seems
exactly.
to be a lot of
on, exactly, right? So he's had some good moments and he's got, and I think that name recognition has a big impact. But, you know, is it worth a point or two or three, like or five, I guess we'll see, right? It's sort of on the watch list for me for potential to not be much, but also potential to be something, right? So we'll see, I guess. But just one final thing is, what is true is that the list is getting long, right? Like I'm doing elections modeling, right? And the quantitative model can only handle so much computation. So I kind of had to pick like 10 parties. And if you have to pick your top 10, it's getting challenging to decide, like, where do you stop? What is the top 10, right?
I mean, here's the ballot paper. It looks like I think they're going to have two columns, so it won't look exactly like that. But, I mean, it's kind of scary. What do you think the chances are for someone like Songezo Zibi and Rise? Because they started off pretty well out of the starting blocks, and they seem to have run a pretty decent campaign, but I think they're falling off very quickly.
Look, I mean, I'll have a go at this, and I have to do one perspective. But, like, I actually think they have run a kind of from just the basic functions of a campaign. I've actually run a fantastic campaign. Like, they actually have one of the – they have a clear message, like, we need new leaders, which is actually a better and more substantive message than many of the larger parties, in my view, right? Just saying action will fix South Africa is like saying – or saying just like rescue South Africa, like what does that actually mean, right? But like they have quite a good message that they've consistently delivered. I think Zibi is actually quite a good campaigner. I think the premier candidates that they've identified is quite good. Like they've obviously chosen to fight with the DA in certain steps in this campaign. And I think so they've kind of positioned themselves as a, you know, on the anti-DA side, anti-MPC side of South African politics, right? Which probably in the long term is not a bad move because I think that's where most South African voters are, right? But I think a lot of their potential vote is also DA vote, right? That is thinking about not voting DA anymore. And the question is how much of that will they actually end up getting? I think that's a big question. So it's a massive question. And I think it's this question about DA voters and whether they stick with the DA or go to Rise or not. And then there's obviously just the huge question about floating ANC voters, particularly in urban areas that are unhappy with the ANC, that are on the sort of wrong track part of the poll, and where they go in the end. Because I think there's enormous contestation in urban townships between the ANC, EFF, DA, Action SA, and Rise to a lesser extent. And the question is how much do they get of that, right? And your guess is as good as mine at this point.
Wayne, any final comments on the small part? Because we're going about this ask before face, but I mean, perhaps there are some of these smaller ones that you think may just hit the ball out of the park.
No, I think it's going to be very difficult. Just a very quick point on Rise. I think would watch them in Johannesburg, where I think they threaten the DA and Action SA somewhat. I don't think they threaten the ANC much in Johannesburg. Maybe some Cyril Ramaphosa national ballot voters in 2019. And in Cape Town, I think they threaten the ANC more there because of their premier candidate. It's quite a well-known activist, strong links to Kaya Litcher. So those, but I don't see them doing well beyond those two particular cities, to be honest. So other small parties to watch. Look, Al Jamaa could be interesting. They got one seat last time with 0.18% of the vote. They got a seat in the legislature. It will be interesting to see if, let's for instance say, that there is Muslim voters who are very happy with the ANC's foreign policy direction but feel let down by something like the NHI. Who's that vote going to go to? So Anna Al Jamaa have a seat. They've got some structure. But I think, again, I mean, I'm just thinking of all these. There's Abel Tau, who broke away, I think he was in the DA and Action SA and then formed his own party in Tshwane. There's a former deputy foreign minister, Marius Fransman, running. There's a former speaker of Johannesburg, Colleen Makubele, running. How many of these people and their parties, as well-intentioned as they might be, are going to land up getting a seat? So Gareth, I mean, I don't know, is there going to be 16 seats in Parliament, 16 parties in Parliament? One party which will disappear, just very quickly, as you mentioned them, I think the National Freedom Party's days are done. I know that they've got a base in Nongoma, which is quite a large population area, and a base in Bergville and Okhuslamba, but I think the infighting's done. And, of course, MK and IFP. So I don't expect them to return either.
And now I suppose we must turn our attention to the official opposition. I mean, the DA has maybe made some missteps along the way. It would be wrong for anyone to give them credit for running a perfect campaign, only because we hold the DA to a higher standard than we seem to hold any other party to. But what do you think their chances are, particularly of holding onto the Western Cape as tightly as they hold onto it now? And then also where you think they might have gone wrong and where it might cost them? Who wants Wayne, to go first? Yeah, Wayne, you grab this one.
This is So we agree that turnout and MK are two big unknowns. And I've said this time and time again, the PA in the Western Cape is an unknown because of that lack of data in the Western Cape. I think the DA will win back some support it lost in 2019 and 2021 to parties like, not all, but clumps of it. So Freedom Front, Action SA. I mean, we're talking about the Western Cape now. So, sorry, the Freedom Front, some good support. I know that they've run, because you can just see it when you look at the registration data, that they won the, when you look at the voters' roll from 5 years ago to today, and you particularly look at the city of Cape Town, that the DA has won that. But it all depends on how high the PA goes. But right now, even though the ENCA poll has them under, I think, at about 44%, I think it's going to be very close to 50%. I think they might just get over the line, but it depends on Gayton McKenzie, because wherever he has gone, the PA's challenge here, and I know the question is about the DA, is if there was, I mean, there's Kenny Kuneni in Gauteng, but if they had someone else in the Western Cape and they could just multiply that, I think it would have been caused more damage to the DA, certainly in the city of Cape Town. So I think the DA will just hold on in the Western Cape. I said it immediately after the 2021 elections when I saw the results, that the DA will grow in KwaZulu-Natal. This was before Chris Pappas was the premier candidate. I've been bullish for some time at the DA in a province like the Free State, possibly the Eastern Cape. But I wonder to see whether there'll be much growth in other provinces. And I think it's going to be a similar performance to last time, maybe 1% down, maybe the same, maybe 1% up. I would be surprised if they were 2% up. And certainly, look, there was a discussion, Gareth, that the EFF would eclipse the DA or catch the DA. I don't think that's been in the cards, and the DA will remain the official opposition and maybe have to do some introspection what their next step is after that.
And what do you say, Davi?
Look, I think so you asked a couple of questions, right? I think the first question is just the nature of the campaign. I actually think the DA has run an excellent campaign. Like the having been, I mean, and just full disclosure, right? I used to work for the DA from 2010 to 2014,
sure.
So and was involved in two DA campaigns. Like the kind of operational volume of their campaign is actually incredibly impressive. The postering, the amount of paid media advertisements, the number of rallies and the size of the rallies. It's clearly very well resourced in this campaign, but it's actually genuinely impressive. I think the DA has run a good campaign from that perspective. I'm not overly impressed with the messaging. I feel like it's been okay, but not particularly breakthrough. And then I do think the flag ad was a mistake, but you know, I don't think it will ultimately hurt them that much. So all in all, I actually think quite a good campaign, a much, much better campaign than 2021, right? Which, had, you know, that the Phoenix posters, there were just some really terrible moments for them in that campaign. So like, I feel like this was a good campaign on balance for them. But with the DA, honestly, there really is a super fundamental question for the DA, which is like how much of the black electorate is open to voting for them and how much of that can they convert? And I still believe that that is the fundamental almost the fundamental question in South African politics, because, you know, in South Africa, if you're a DA voter or someone who is kind of like on the DA side of South African politics, the kind of our problems as a country from the DA perspective will not get solved unless you strip out 10 or 15% of the ANC vote to come to your side, right? And I think a vast majority of the DA's base wants that. And I think that the DA's time to deliver on that, right, is running out, is in my view. And the question is, there are signs that maybe in this election they will progress on that, right? We shall see. I think that will be a huge question. So that for me is the biggest and most fundamental question regarding the DA in this election. And I think it also the outcome on that particular question will affect our trajectory going forward quite a lot. And then the second question, just which is, I think, quite consequential just for their result and for a couple of tactical questions, is just how they do with their base, right? Because in 2021, they lost a lot of voter action, say, in Joburg, a bit in Durban. So, like, do they get some of that back or not? You know, I think there is a portion of the DA electorate that is quite left-leaning and progressive, you know, that may be tempted by something like a rise, like Rise Mzansi. Let's see if that actually happens in urban areas or not. And you know, there's also the DA coalition does have some chunk of black voters, right, which is now understood by Action SA, understood by Rise Mzansi, do they hold that or not? And then there's the PA question. So for me, there's kind of like two questions for the DA. The one is, to what extent do they hold onto their base? The polling seems to suggest, if it's even directionally accurate, that they will, right? But let's see, that they will hold onto their base. And then the second question is just, do they grow into the black electorate? And that for me is the really big question, and particularly, can they grow into the black electorate, but now with lots of competition in that market, right? And we shall see. I think the outcome of this election is going to be incredibly consequential for the trajectory we're going on. And I'll sorry, no long answer, but I just want to say one more thing. Because I think everyone can see that this election, well, the ANC is going to lose some votes. And, you know, maybe they go as low as in the mid-40s, but probably this is the sort of election where the ANC gets hit, but is in a position to be, you know, the leading a coalition government. Like, this is not like a fundamental explosive change election. But let's see. Again, that's speculative, but let's see. But I think everyone is eyeing 2029, right? Because that it's just set up that if the ANC really goes to like 45, 46, and there's all this demographic change taking place, we stay on the wrong track because it's difficult to see our problems magically getting fixed in the next 3 or 4 years. I think people are eyeing 2029. And in some ways, this election feels like, if you follow American politics, like a primary for 2029, specifically in this Action SA, Rise, DA
part of the world. Like, how does one construct a multiracial alternative that could win 30 or 35% in 2029 and actually be really at the core of a new national government? And the outcome in this election is going to be incredibly determinative of how that discussion evolves and what happens in 2026 and what happens in 2029, and whether BOSA, Action SA, and RISE stay different parties and different parties from the DA, I think is a huge question. And the election result will determine a lot in that. So this is going to be very, very consequential.
I see Wayne is nodding along with you. So that's a good sign, because where you two agree, I'm excited about what could happen. Now, obviously, there are going to be certain places that you guys, because you're trained at this and you know what to look for, you're going to be watching results-wise on election day. So give us a little inside track here. For those of us who are not as well-versed and as experienced in this world as you guys are, what should we be watching in order to give ourselves early indicators as the results start to pour in of what that final poll result will look like? Where are you going to be most interested in looking?
We can go popcorn some, but just one thing not to read too much into is when the early results come in and you see big, I think they use the kind of purple or orange, big parts of purple or orange across the northwest. Those are usually very small voting districts with 50 voters, which cover large territories, which the Freedom Front won the last time. But I'm happy for Darby to go first if he wants, or do you want me to go first? I'm happy.
You're on the spot.
So, okay, here we go. I'm watching places like, not just because I'm speaking on the Burning Platform and people in the Burning Platform have family, have ties there. I'm going to watch places like Kwatema in Springs, Davyton. These are all townships near Kuruleni in the East Rand. I'm going to be watching Etatwa, Langeville, seeing whether MK are going to be making returns there. I'm going to be looking at places, of course, specific places like Protea Glen in Soweto, where Action SA did well the last time. We can go on for many, because we at ENCA also have a model. And there are wards. You should look at wards where there are a significant number of voters. No, and by the way, just one thing to say, that I think in Gauteng and the metros, not from a turnout perspective, but I think 2021 is often more indicative than 2019, because Action SA and PA didn't feature in many key wards in 2019 and are obviously going to feature there, or should be featuring there, in 2021. We do have our bellwether wards, et cetera, to look at, bellwether voting districts to look at. Turnout is something, when those results start coming in and you just want to see ANC, DA, EFF percentages or numbers, I think turnout is going to be key to look at. And I'm happy for Darby to go now, and I might come in at the end.
Okay, all right, Darby, you're up.
So I think, two things to say. So the first thing is that's always fun on election night is the Northern Cape has tons of small little voting stations, right? So it comes in quite quickly, quite a lot of voting stations quite quickly. And in 2019, the Northern Cape, I think the ANC did 57% or something like that in the Northern Cape. And nationally, the ANC also got 57%. So like just if you're like a casual watcher, right? Have a look at the Northern Cape, and if the Northern Cape is like 20 to 30% counted, which is usually like by 4 or 5 a.m. the next morning, and the ANC is at 50% in the Northern Cape, it's definitely not a perfect science. But if they're minus 7 in the Northern Cape, 5 a.m. on, Wednesday morning, or sorry, Thursday morning, like probably you're not going to be very far off if you say, oh, the ANC is going to be between minus 9 and minus 5. Because, nationally. So, it's like an interesting direction setter for the evening typically. There's a much more scientific way to answer this question than the way, honestly, the way I do it is, as voting stations come in, one by one, you kind of look at the level of turnout in that voting station, and you look at kind of what kind of voting station, right? So I think the critical question is urban, more minority, more like anti-ANC voting type areas, right? Like, what is the turnout level in those areas versus like basically ANC voting areas in the townships and rural areas? Is there a significant difference in the turnout pattern? That's one critical thing to look at. And then I think just like indicatively, like, is the DA up or down in suburban areas, and is the ANC up or down in township areas? Like, those are basically the two fundamental things to look at that will kind of be indicative trends, I think, for the election. That's the very, very simplified answer.
Yeah, and just Darby, what he said about the Northern Cape, just very quickly. You know, in the United Kingdom, Gareth, they have Sunderland, and that's quite a large place, which often declares first. I don't know what the state of their soccer team is these days. But us, poor South Africans, instead of getting Sunderland, we get Robben Island, which is like 40, 50 people, which isn't really indicative. So I think that's going to be a challenge. But on what Darby said, so Darby, I think the Northern Cape, Free State, Northwest, because lower population sizes, not very deep rural areas. I know the Northwest does have some. I think those vote counts will move quickly. But what Darby said about the Northern Cape is I think PA will get insights into the PA, and those might play out in rural areas of the Western Cape as well. Not necessarily the city of Cape Town, but I agree that we could get very good insights. And then the other part, it's what a lovely privilege to speak about the Northern Cape. There's that part of the Northern Cape where that's why I always say the opposition parties are dreaming about the Northern Cape, which is called the John Taylor Gaetswe District, which is a former homeland, Motibi Stad, Kuruman. Watch that, because that's how much of the Northwest might play out in rural areas. So the Northern Cape might not have a lot of people, but it can give us regional trends.
Listen, that's the first time we've ever focused on Northern Cape, and I think it might just be the last. But guys, it's a great privilege to spend time with you this evening or this morning, and to be able to figure out what your activities will be like on election results day. All I can say is good luck. There are a couple of sleepless nights ahead for all of those number crunches, and that most of all includes you two. And thank you for sharing some of your insights with us today. I hope that this helps a lot of people to figure out what's going on.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Darby. Thank you so much. Thank you, Wayne. Very good.
No EFF.
No, go EFF. All right, there we go. He's fired his
own. No. All
right. Cut him off at just the wrong moment. Now we'll never know. Wayne Sussman, Darby Skultz, thank you both very, very much. That is a special burning platform in the week before the elections. There's a lot of information there. There's a lot that could change. So both of them were quite sensibly guarding against saying anything that would tie them to a very particular result. But you've heard what they're going to be watching, so you can watch the same thing. And just maybe you'll be able to pip everyone else to the post. Let's see what happens. Good luck to everybody.